Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
And hello again, John Jeffers here on the Jeffers Brief on KYAH and KNAK and, of course, on CRN, the Contra Radio Network. Welcome. Glad you're here. Today, I want to talk to you about something a little different. Something I've noticed, and I'm wondering if you've noticed it too. Simply put, oh, here, let me back up and let me ask you something. My wife was watching the Bravo Network. It was the Real Housewives of wherever, okay? And she likes watching that. And I said, there is no way on God's green earth that people have this much drama in their lives. They just can't. I said, this has to be fake. It has to be manufactured. It's just not real. And she looks at me, she goes, I know. I said, well, okay, fine. But so I sat down, I just wanted to catch a bit of it. And something that hit me, that really struck me. Now, if you're not familiar with the forum, they get these four or five wives or ex-wives. Some are related by family. Some have been friends supposedly for a long time. And it struck me how these women behave in public. It's bad enough the way they talk to each other when it's just, they're by themselves, and of course no one realizes there's a camera behind them or off to the side of them recording everything they say and do. Beside that, though, what they say to each other in private is bad enough, but when you see the way they behave in public, I'm thinking, could this possibly be a symptom of what is wrong with American society, with the way we treat each other, with the way we talk to each other, with the way we behave by ourselves in public, and how others view us as people, as individuals. So I'm watching this, and I look at her, and I must have said it out loud, because I looked at her and said, I said, I can't believe they're actually saying this stuff to each other. And they're supposed to be sister-in-laws? Are you kidding me? And I was just flabbergasted. In fact, I remember the episode that really got me. Apparently they had a new person come into the group, and they were guests. They were all from the East Coast. This particular episode was, where were they? New Jersey. They were all guests of one of the other members of the group, their longtime friend, lifetime friend, who lived down in Texas. I think it's around the Houston area, I think. Anyways, they're down at her house. She put six or seven of them, put them up for the weekend or whatever. And the way they were treating their host, the way they behaved, I was actually shocked. It's like, oh my Lord, I would never behave in such fashion. And if I did, there's no way I could look my family in the face. I'd be too embarrassed. I'd be too humiliated by my own behavior for doing this. But this being what it is, so I'm starting to think to myself, you know what? I wonder if America has a narcissism problem. So before I started doing the episode today, I thought, you know what? Let me look into it. Let's do some research. Let's see what we're talking about here. And out of Cambridge University, Cambridge Analytica, the University of Cambridge in the UK, has, I guess, an online news magazine called The Conversation. And one of them they did was from March 11th. And it's pretty interesting. And I wanted to share it with you before we got further into it. Now, before I even start that, let's do this, shall we? How many of you have seen people behave questionably in public? And you're thinking, oh my Lord, what is that about? Whether, for example, and we've seen it on TV because our television, the people that run our networks and provide shows to our children, to our adolescents, and to ourselves, are promoting this kind of behavior as this is the way to act. This is the way to be. We got people who, instead of being, you know, have decided that it's much more cool to be in your face, confrontational. You've seen it. Well, and that doesn't, oh, by the way, and I'm not talking about any particular ethnic group. We all do it. You've seen it. So, ethnicity has nothing to do with it. What it has to do with is the way that they were raised. For example, you might see somebody having an argument, being confrontational, in their face, screaming at them, and when the person tries to answer back, the other person just interrupts them constantly, tries to talk louder, as if being louder means you win the argument. It doesn't. All it does is show everybody, one, how weak your argument is, because you will not allow anyone else to defend themselves or to argue against your position. So you figure, if I can be louder, interrupt them constantly, and keep them from speaking, therefore, there's no way I could be defeated. Well, guess what? By that very behavior, you have defeated yourself. And the weaker people out there will laugh and you say, yeah, yeah, because you know what? They don't want to be the next target. So let's ask ourselves, why are we becoming so narcissistic? Now, here's the science of it. According to The Conversation, is this. The term narcissism originated more than 2,000 years ago when Ovid wrote The Legend of Narcissus. He tells the story of a beautiful Greek hunter who, one day, happens to see his reflection in a pool of water and falls in love with it. He becomes obsessed with its beauty and is unable to leave his reflected image until he dies. After his death, the flower Narcissus grew where he lay. The concept of narcissism was popularized by the psychoanalyst Sigmund Freud through his work on the ego and its relationship to the outside world. This work became the starting point for many others developing theories on narcissism. So, when does it become a problem? Narcissism lies on a continuum from healthy to pathological. Healthy narcissism is part of normal human functioning. It can represent healthy self-love and confidence that is based on real achievement, the ability to overcome setbacks and derive the support needed from social ties. But narcissism becomes a problem when the individual becomes preoccupied with the self, needing excessive admiration and approval from others. Let's take a quick note here. Who, in what industry in the United States, would that seem to be pointing out to? What group of people needs excessive admiration and approval from others? You know it. Let's say it together. Hollywood. Yes. Those people who pat each other on the back and tell each other how great they are. Yes. Think about it. Professional pretenders. Let's go back to it. while showing disregard for other people's sensitivities. If the narcissist does not receive the attention desired, substance abuse and major depressive disorder can develop. Narcissists often portray an image of grandiosity, of overconfidence to the world, but this is only to cover up deep feelings of insecurity and a fragile self-esteem that is easily bruised by the slightest criticism. Because of these traits, narcissists find themselves in shallow relationships that only serve to satisfy their constant need for attention. What I would call being an attention whore. Probably can't say that on the radio, but I am. When narcissistic traits become so pronounced that they lead to impairment, this could indicate the presence of narcissistic personality disorder. The Diagnostic Statistic Manual of Mental Disorders describes narcissistic personality disorder as a pervasive pattern of grandiosity, need for admiration, a lack of empathy that begins by early adulthood, and is present in a variety of contexts. People with narcissistic personality disorder show a grandiose sense of self-importance, are consumed by fantasies of unlimited success, power, brilliance, beauty, or ideal love, and are extremely sensitive to criticism, among other things. Younger people and men seem to be most affected. The exact causes of narcissistic personality disorder are unknown, but childhood abuse and neglect may be possible factors for, in its formation. What has led to its increase? In the clinical setting, about 2% to 16% of people suffer from this disorder, while in the general population, less than 1% of people are affected. Some suggest that narcissistic personality disorder is quite rare, but study estimates vary widely depending on the sample sizes and the ways that narcissistic traits are assessed. Others have labeled narcissism a modern epidemic, pointing to the rapid change in society that occurred in industrial and post-industrial times as the cause. The past few decades have witnessed a societal shift from a commitment to the collective to a focus on the individual or the self. The self-esteem movement was an important turning point in this. It determined that self-esteem was the key to success in life. Educators and parents started telling their children how special and unique they are to make them feel more confidence. Parents tried to confer self-esteem upon their children rather than letting them achieve it through hard work. The rise of individualism, with its focus on the self and inner feelings, and decline in social norms that accompanied the modernization of society, also meant that the community and the family were no longer able to provide the same support for individuals as they once did. And research has shown that being embedded in social networks, for example, being actively engaged in your community and connected with friends and family has major health benefits. As the social fabric deteriorated, it became much harder to meet the basic need for meaningful connection. The question moved from what is best for other people in the family to what is best for me. The modernization of society seemed to prize fame, wealth, celebrity, above all else. All this, combined with the breakdown in social ties, created an empty self shorn of social meaning. The rise in technology and the development of the hugely popular social networking sites such as Facebook further changed the way we spend our free time and communicate. Today, there are nearly 936 million active Facebook users each day worldwide. Internet addiction is a new area of study in mental health, and recent cross-sectional research shows that addiction to Facebook is strongly linked to narcissistic behavior and low self-esteem. So what can we do about it? Treatment for narcissistic personality disorder exists, and this includes pharmacotherapy and psychotherapy. Mediation has also been shown to have, meditation has been shown to have positive effects on mental health. Further research, however, is needed on the effectiveness of various treatments. So, what can we do about all this, and how can we lead a happy and purposeful life? One of the largest studies on happiness was conducted by a group of Harvard researchers who followed a large cohort of people over a period of 75 years. What they discovered, unsurprisingly, was that fame and money were not the secrets to happiness. Rather, the most important thing in life and the greatest predictor of satisfaction was having strong and supportive relationships. Essentially, that the journey from immaturity to maturity is a sort of movement from narcissism to connection. So maybe it's time to take a break from that smartphone, except to listen to my show. Shut off your computer, unless you're going to be listening to Contra Radio Network and the Jeffers Brief, and meet up with a friend or two, and then tell them about the Jeffers Brief. Maybe, just maybe, you might feel a little better and boost your self-esteem. Okay, now we got an idea of what narcissism is. Now, believe me, this is like, John, where are you going with this? What are you talking about? You know what I'm talking about. You've seen it. You know it. And we're going to try to get to all of it. Because all I got 59 minutes and 50 seconds to get this in for this episode. And I want to get it in because I think it's important. I do. So, let's do something a little different here. Let's take a narcissistic personality disorder test. Now, I'm going to give you a list of questions that relate to life experiences common among people who have been diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder. I'm going to read the question, and you give me or indicate how often you've experienced the same or similar challenges in the past. They actually can't give it to me. But here's the test to find out. Do you experience an exaggerated sense of self-importance? Do you expect to be seen as superior to other people? Now, don't read anything into the question. Just take the question as is. Do you ever exaggerate your talents or accomplishments? Do you require constant admiration from others? Do you engage in fantasies about being successful, powerful, or beautiful? Do you expect total compliance and special favors from others? Do you struggle to recognize the emotions and needs of other people? Do others perceive you as arrogant or haughty? That's one test. So let's try this one. I'm going to give you I'll give you questions. You assign the value. You assign the value to it. So basically, if you get a total score higher than 10, pay attention to your narcissism light. You may have fairly easily be able to lower that score considerably. A total score of 18 or higher spells significant narcissistic habits that probably do not serve you well. Time to make some serious habit changes. A score of 24 or higher would indicate serious problems with narcissism. Hopefully you will commit yourself to some serious personal growth. And note that the score interpretations are based on general patterns, not an experimentally validated scoring system. They are meant as a personal heads up, not a clinical diagnosis. So let's get to it here. All right, the score dimension is this, 0 to 5. 5 is all the time, 0 is not at all. You ready? OK, Get your pencils and papers ready, boys and girls. Time for a little self-check here. All right. The goal is this: see your and other patterns clearly. Clarity is the first strong step towards being able to make changes for the better. Number one, remember, assign 1 to 5 on these questions. Number one, unilateral listening. What I want and what I have to say are all that matters when we talk together. When we make decisions, what you want, your concerns, your feelings, these are mere whispers, inconveniences, and irrelevancies. So when we discuss issues, my opinions are right, yours are wrong, or else of minimal importance. If you expect to have input, you are undermining me. Score, 1 to 5. Sign number 2, it's all about me. I know more, I know better, I'm more interesting. When we talk, it's mostly about me. In conversations, I take up most of the airtime. Almost all of my chatter is about what I have done and what I am thinking about. Score it, 0 through 5. Number 3, the rules don't apply to me. I can have affairs, cut into line where others are waiting, cheat on my taxes, ignore rules that get in the way of my doing what I want. Rules are for other people to follow. Score it. Sign number 4. Your concerns are really criticisms of me, and I hate being criticized. Narcissist, paradoxically, well, I think it pretty much says it all. So, narcissists paradoxically manifest both an inflated idea of their own importance and quickness to feel deflated by negative feedback. Criticism hurts. I can criticize others and often do, but if you criticize me, you're hurting my feelings, so I'll hurt you back. Score it. Sign number 5. I'm right, you're wrong. So when things go wrong between us, it's always your fault. I can't be expected to apologize or to admit blame. I'm above others and above reproach. If you expect me to say how I've contributed to a problem, I'll get mad at you. Unwillingness to take responsibility for mistakes may come from confusing the part with the whole. If I've done one thing that's not right, then I must be all bad. That's all or nothing thinking. Score it. Sign number 6. Remember, 0 to 5 on the scoring. Sign number 6. I may be quick to anger, but when I get angry, it's because you, and then fill in the blank. You made me mad. You didn't listen to me. You criticized me. You're trying to control me. Your view is wrong, so you need to apologize to me. If I'm mad, it's because I'm frustrated by what you're doing. I'm only mad because you did this. Score it, 0 to 5. If you've done it, what does the score indicate? Okay, scores of 10 or less indicates healthy to average range. Too much narcissism in your habits would be indicated by a total score higher than 10. Pay attention to your narcissism light, and you may be fairly easy to be able to control that score considerably. Now, how about you? Something to think about. Just throw it out there. Now let's do this. How to spot a narcissist on social media. Can we talk about that? Can we? You've seen them. We've all seen them. Some of you are narcissists who spotted another narcissist. So we all have those annoying Facebook friends who simply can't stop posting selfies. As soon as they cross the threshold of a location, They create a check-in status, and they never fail to inform us if they feel excited or relaxed there. Eventually, we block such people, but then again, aren't we all like that at times? Psychologists warn that narcissistic, self-exposing behavior is on the rise nowadays, and many blame social media for this increase. I agree. In my uneducated, uninformed world, I agree with that entirely. Studies show that the levels of subclinical narcissism, or the personality trait that all normal individuals possess to a certain degree, have increased worldwide since the 1970s. Self-esteem is rapidly rising too, according to data published by the Review of General Psychology. 80% of American students scored higher in self-esteem in 2006 than the generation from 1988. Take just a second here. Let me make a note here. In the 1980s, my generation, we were considered the me generation. Apparently, we've lost the title. Scientists have also found that today's young people are more likely than older adults to have experienced narcissistic personality disorder or the clinical dimension of narcissism. Can we explain this sudden epidemic with the advent of social media? As it turns out, narcissism is not a stable personality trait, but rather a manifestation dependent largely on the environment. For instance, media can influence whether we act as narcissists. A recent study showed that people exposed to narcissistic reality TV characters exhibit higher levels of narcissism immediately afterwards. I gotta show this to my wife. Here, honey, you're watching these Housewives from Hell? Here you go. Get a grip here. Other data supports this theory. A paper from 2011 found that teenagers who use Facebook more often show more narcissistic tendencies than their peers. Increased Facebook use is directly linked to narcissism in adults also, indicate results from a self-report study published this August. By the way, when was this? Before we go, let me get crazy here. From 2016. There you go. All right. So, what turns social networks into incubators for self-absorbed individuals? The reason lies in their nature. As psychologist Eric B. Weiser states, social networks may create or reinforce narcissistic tendencies because they serve primarily as self-promotional platforms. That is true. However, the opposite may also hold true. More narcissists will be active on social media as these platforms allow them to engage in exhibitionistic, attention-seeking, and self-promoting behaviors. So let's keep in mind that people with narcissistic characters need admiration from others. Their grandiose self-views thrive on easy-to-obtain social media endorsements, such as likes, shares, or new followers. Furthermore, narcissists prefer superficial connections with other people and are really bad at listening and expressing empathy. This again makes social networks a very tempting environment for them. So how do we spot a narcissist online? That's really a question, isn't it? Although we all become narcissistic on social media, some remain more vocal than others in their self-expression. So how can you pick out narcissistic behaviors that go beyond the normal levels? The first thing to pay attention to is their photos. People with narcissistic tendencies care very much about their pictures. For example, they're more likely to wear expensive, flashy clothing on photos, and their general appearance reveals a lot of preparation. These conclusions were made in a study that aimed to discover whether people can determine if others are narcissists just by looking at their photos. As part of the process, researchers identified 16 visual cues that reveal if a person in a photo is narcissistic, and all these cues were related to the narcissist's desire to be the center of attention. For example, a female narcissist tend to wear makeup and show cleavage more often than other women. Male narcissists are more likely to wear clothes that enhance their social status and less likely to have sunglasses in photos. as a rule. People with higher scores on narcissism are more motivated to select profile photos on Facebook that emphasize their attractiveness. Now, this data comes from the Ludwig Maximilian University of Munich. The research team analyzed the Facebook presence of 288 students and asked them about their motivation to choose particular images. Similar results can be found in a more detailed paper that examined how narcissism is generally manifested on social media. The researchers coded the Facebook pages of 156 students according to criteria such as photos, activity on the platform, number of lines in the About section. A group of independent observers was then asked to view each Facebook profile and answer questions on the content. The findings show that indeed, participants with higher scores of narcissism post more attractive photos. Their images were also perceived as more entertaining by the external observers. The study also discovered that narcissistic users have more Facebook friends than others, create more posts in general, and more self-promotional posts than informative ones in particular, while they also write longer descriptions in the About section of their pages. The researchers linked the larger number of friends with the fact that narcissists prefer weak ties or shallow connections and like to win Facebook friends as trophies. Interesting. Never thought of myself as a trophy. Okay. Another possible explanation could be that narcissistic people are typically extroverted, according to a meta-analysis of 62 studies on social media and narcissism published recently. Narcissists tend to have more friends and generate more content on social media, may in part be linked to their extroversion. Not introversion, extroversion. So if you assume that excessive posting on social media would also mean that narcissistic individuals spend more time on their smartphones, well, you're wrong, it turns out. Surprisingly, that narcissists are less dependent on the touch screen than others. A smartphone data tracking study analyzed how much time people spent on a mobile every day and found that participants with higher smartphone usage typically have lower scores on the narcissistic personality inventory. According to the authors, this can be explained by the fact that people mostly use their smartphones for social interaction, which is exactly what narcissists avoid. Monitoring social media feeds of others or experiencing the fear of missing out are not typical for narcissism, but relate more to neurotism. I'm not sure what that is. Neurotism. Okay. Another form of proof that someone is narcissistic can be found in his or her writing style. Do they use I, me, or my a lot? Do they swear? Researchers from the University of Georgia did a linguistics analysis on individual Facebook pages based on the fact that narcissists tend to speak more about themselves and use more personal pronouns. By the way, who does that sound like? Think about that. Who might that be? When he was in office, we used to do counts on how many times he used the words I, me, or my. Yep, we're talking about Obama. However, when there were no first-person pronouns in the text, narcissistic authors used other verbal tactics to attract attention to their content. They used more profane and antisocial terms. A linguistic analysis of 1,000 Twitter accounts yielded similar results. People with higher levels of narcissism were found to use more words about anger and negative emotions and fewer words about social interaction. Interestingly, several studies have also found a connection between narcissism and cyberbullying. Although there are different opinions on what types of narcissism better predicts cyberbullying behavior, one thing is clear. People with an emphasized narcissistic trait often try to attract attention by using bad language and more direct verbal attacks. Remember when I started the show, I talked about being up in your face confrontational? That's what we're talking about here. A more common characteristic for the media presence of narcissists is an abundance of selfies. Results from a survey completed by 1,200 U.S. residents reveal that two dimensions of narcissism positively correlate with the frequency of posting selfies on social media. These are the leadership authority type, attributed to individuals who seek power and authority over others, and the exhibitionism, grandiosity type, which reflects self-absorption, vanity, and attention-seeking. And there's more to that. Not only are narcissists more likely to produce selfies, the very act of taking selfies alone makes people more narcissistic. Results from a longitudinal study show an increase in the subsequent levels of narcissism in people who photograph themselves more often. Another paper examined the relationship between narcissism and various types of selfie posting behaviors. Posting solo selfies, selfies with a group, and editing selfies. The results indicate that narcissists post more solo selfies and edit their selfies more often than other people. Lastly, thought-provoking data. Researcher David G. Taylor from Sacred Heart University found that narcissistic people post more travel photos on Facebook. Certainly, it doesn't mean they gallivant more. Travel images are a type of self-promoting content, and as such, they are published with the idea to attract attention and enhance our social status. The most narcissistic platform, and there are more narcissistic users on Twitter than on Facebook. According to a study from 2013, Sean Bergman and his colleagues analyzed posting behaviors and motivation for social media use of 500 students and found that college students who scored higher on the NPI, the Narcissistic Personality Inventory, preferred Twitter. This can be explained why the fact that the platform encourages posting frequent updates and accumulating shallow, non-reciprocal relationships, also known as followers, which are most likely desired by narcissists. Remember, they want superficial relationships. You get into a deep relationship that would require the narcissist to actually think of someone else other than themselves, and therefore that's not going to happen. However, the researchers acknowledge that the nature of the two platforms is different, in that Facebook offers opportunity for self-promotion, which features aimed at embellishing one's personal Facebook page, for instance, changing the profile photo, filling out the About section, adding one's interest, etc. The results from the study also show that Facebook is the preferred option for adults with narcissistic tendencies, while Twitter remains a platform of choice for younger narcissists. Fast-growing visual platforms such as Instagram or Snapchat must also be considered. Instagram, for example, was found to attract younger audience with a narcissistic tendencies. And the main motivation of narcissistic Instagram users was to appear, you know, cool in the eyes of their followers. In another study, 124 students filled out an online survey that measured both their levels of narcissism and their preference for specific social media platforms. Regular users of Snapchat and Instagram exhibited higher levels of the exhibitionism, grandiosity, dimension of narcissism than users of Facebook and Twitter. Now, you know, you got me, my cell phone, and I, all right? We're all narcissistic to some extent. In the digital zeitgeist, self-exposure has become an easy way to communicate, which many of us embrace. Ironically, however, people create polished online versions of themselves with the aim to attract others and harvest just the opposite results. The truth is that narcissistic contact is perceived unfavorably by social media users. A recent study collected status updates from 316 Facebook pages and presented them as screenshots to a group of people. To ensure objectivity, details like profile photos, names, and other page information were blurred. The observers are asked to evaluate the status updates based on criteria such as likability, successfulness, and likelihood of being friends with the author of the status. The results showed that people who posted narcissistic status updates, example, purging my friends list, good luck making the cut, were perceived as less likable, less successful, and less worthy of friendship than those who posted less narcissistic or neutral status updates. For example, I know everything will be okay, nobody can bring me down. So, think twice before you humble brag about a new job or upload another selfie. Instead, maybe link a cat video and certainly probably provoke more honest likes. So how do you spot a narcissist online? Let's review. They post attractive photos, dress more elegantly, usually have lots of friends or followers, post more often, post self-promoting content. In other words, they would do anything to attract attention. They're active on Twitter. They prefer weak ties. They publish more selfies, more travel photos, and use profane words more often, and pronouns such as I, me, my. Just think about it. That's all. Now you're saying, John, where are you going with this? I'm going to tell you. Because of this, what I would think is an obvious increase in narcissistic behavior in American society, and we've seen how people confront each other. That is a form of narcissism. It's also a form of having no social graces at all, whatsoever, none. Maybe people have forgotten them. Maybe if we practiced or learned, some of you out there, to have social graces and etiquette, it might change some of your behavior. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, I say please and thank you. Well, you should. By the time kids are 10 years old, they should have a basic understanding of please and thank you. It's the kids who think that everything is should be given to them, who are entitled. I'm entitled to it. Mom and Dad said I'm special, I'm unique, I'm different, and therefore I am entitled to it because I am. Well, let's do something here. Let's do this. Reader's Digest posted 50 tips for 50 little etiquette rules you should always practice. So when to start eating? Wait for everyone to be seated. If you're seated at a table with 8 or fewer guests, wait until everyone is served and for the hostess to begin eating before you dig in. At a lawn banquet table, it's okay to start when several people are seated and served. What to keep off the table? Anything not food related. All items not having to do with food and decoration should remain off the table. Keys, clutch, bags, sunglasses, and especially phones. When to text? You don't text at the table. If you're in a situation where you excuse yourself to go to the washroom, you should also excuse yourself before reaching for your phone. Don't forget, there's lots of other cell phone etiquette tips you need to start following. What to do if you're not drinking wine? Don't turn your glass upside down. Don't make a big deal of saying you don't drink. Simply place your fingertips on the rim of the glass and say, "Not today, thanks." This implies no judgment for those who wish to imbibe. How to talk on a speakerphone. Tell people they're on speakerphone. Don't use a speakerphone unless you're in your office and holding a meeting that's being attended by someone remotely. Alert the person you're speaking with that there are others present. Close the door. And definitely don't be a chatterbox while you talk. FYI, using speakerphone at full volume to go through your voicemail is the definition of annoying and being narcissistic. By telling everybody, look how many voicemails I get. That's how important I am. I'll open the door for someone else. Whoever arrives first gets the door. We're at the time where it doesn't matter the gender either. How to handle the work kitchen microwave. Don't microwave stinky foods. Here are some basic airport etiquette. Don't crowd the boarding area. And once you're on board, stow your stuff and get out of the aisle quickly. When claiming your baggage, don't crowd the carousel. Step forward only when you see your bag. All right, easy enough. Basic email etiquette. Don't send an email that just says, thanks. If all you have to say in your email reply is thanks, refrain from sending it. You're just clogging an inbox. Try this basic cell phone etiquette tip. Keep your phone out of an oral conversation. When talking to someone in person, don't glance down at your cell phone to see who's trying to reach you. Here's how to be polite in email. Don't use all caps. Things not to do in emailing. Shout in all caps. Use colored fonts or clip art emoticons. Attach large files. Forward an email unless appropriate. When to send text, work text versus emails. Restrict the hours for business text. For those of you that don't know, personally, I have a private time set on my cell phone. I do. After 8:30, 9 o'clock, or 9:30, depending on what day it is and how I'm feeling, I don't want any more calls. And I only allow certain people to break through that rule. So, that's just me. Work emails can be sent anytime, but business texts should be restricted to 1 hour before the start of the workday to 2 hours after it ends, according to the modern gentleman. Here's the right way to squeeze lemon into your drink. Shield your lemon so you're not squirting all over God's half acre. Use your hand to shield your lemon as you squeeze it into your iced tea so you don't inadvertently squirt your dining companion in the eye. And yes, it does happen. How about basic napkin etiquette people miss? Dab your mouth before you drink. Yeah, one of the things that gets me more disgusted quicker. You're at a restaurant, and you've seen these people. You know I'm going to go with this, but I'm going to say it anyways. You're at the restaurant. Not only do you hold your utensils properly, but you look across the room, and you have some people, might be a couple, it could be a family, and they're holding their utensils like shovels. You know what I'm talking about. You know it. You see them and they're shoveling food in their mouth as fast as they can get into their little cheek pouches. And it gets even better when they try to talk to each other, because then we all get to see all their chewed food as it flies out of their mouth at each other as they grunt and make noises as they sit there and try to ingest. What bothers me most is seeing adults doing it. When I see adults who are not doing it and their kids look like they were just taken off a trough line because they're doing it and they're not even correcting them. Look, I don't have a problem with kids in public. I don't. I was taught basic rules. Etiquette, if you will. Etiquette. Social graces. Don't talk with your mouth full. Don't shovel food in your mouth like you're a starving animal. Don't talk with your mouth full because no one wants to see it. Don't, you know, it's these little things. And we should be teaching our kids this so they can teach it to theirs. Let me ask you something. Do we even know what the definition of social graces and etiquette is? Well, let's talk about that before we continue, because it's important. It really is. To know what the definition is. If you don't know the definition, then you cannot do it. Social graces are skills used to interact politely in social situations. They include manners, etiquette, deportment, and fashion. The focus on social graces has changed over the last century, recently with an emphasis on business etiquette and international protocol. And you can look those up. But I have to tell you, you know those people I'm talking about. And you don't sit there. Now, this is true. I saw this one time, and I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't stop staring. I was violating my own social graces. But when I saw this, I couldn't look away. I couldn't. When I tell you about it, you're going to say, you know what? I've seen those people. I've seen them out there. I've seen that lost tribe of people who have no social graces or manners whatsoever. We were at a restaurant, and the restaurant that night was having an all-you-can-eat buffet. Lots of food. Lots of choices. Nothing wrong with it. Until I saw a family of younger people, by younger, in their 20s. And when I tell you that they had a mountain of food on a small dinner plate, I was quite impressed with the fact they could walk away from the buffet and not spill a morsel from the plate. I was intrigued. I said, how is this possible? Is the gravity over them stronger than over me? Granted, there's only 12 feet between us, but I couldn't look away. I said, oh my gosh, this is like a circus act. Are you kidding me? And I'm watching it. And then my intrigue and interest turned to anger. When two of the six animals, barbarians if you will, got up to get more and left half of the mountain of food on their plate. There is nothing that irritates me more than wasting food. It's just a personal pet peeve of mine. I don't like when you do it. I think wasting food is, well, sinful. How dare you waste food? Look, we live in a country of plenty. We do. And when you think about other people living on the other side of the planet who would give their left eye for that food, or for the food you just threw in the garbage, yeah, that I find that sinful. Anyways, so major food passing faux pas. Don't be greedy. Grabbing a bowl of salad or a salt shaker as it's being passed to someone who asked for it is the equivalent of cutting in line. Greedy and rude. Don't do it. The proper way to pass food. Dishes go counterclockwise, from left to right. But if someone to your left asks for something, you can hand it to them directly. Here's the deal with taking home leftovers. Don't ask for leftovers at a business lunch or dinner. When out with family or friends, even at fancy restaurants, fine to ask for your leftovers to be wrapped. But don't do it as business lunch or dinner. When to check your phone in meetings. Respect your boss. Don't check personal devices during a meeting intended by your boss or anyone else who can make her disapproval your problem. When you're looking at your phone, you're saying, look, I'm bored here. I need to know how much longer I'm going to be here. How long have I been here? That kind of thing. How to properly answer the phone. State your name on the phone. When answering the phone at work, state your name and place of business. Widgets Incorporated, John Jeffers speaking. How may I help you? This is the right way to leave a business voicemail. Keep work voicemails brief. When leaving voicemail, state your name, place of business, and number. Succinctly say why you're calling. Repeat step one. Say goodbye. How to behave in an elevator. Let people off the elevator. This is another thing I've seen that drives me nuts, too. You should also hold the doors for others before you board. And when you're waiting at the elevator to get on the elevator, get the hell out of the way so the people on the elevator can get off. How to introduce people at work. Name the person of greater status first. For example, Mrs. CEO, I'd like you to meet the mail guy, John Jeffers. This is the proper way to use your cell phone at work. Turn your phone on silent. If you leave your cell phone at your desk, turn it off, particularly if your ringtone is anything Justin Bieberish. How to handle sick days. Stay at home from work when you're sick. Your colleagues will thank you. How to stand up during a flight. Respect your fellow passengers. If you need to get up during a flight, don't yank the back of the seat in front of you as you do. Playground etiquette. Share your toys. Playground etiquette says a toy that has been abandoned is up for grabs until its owner wants it back. Well, it's true. How much time have I got left? Oh, I got about 4 minutes. Essential part of being a good host. Don't let guests drive drunk. Hand a hello guest at a wedding. Read the wedding invitation. Don't ask to bring a guest to a wedding if your invitation doesn't indicate any. Wedding gift rule for all brides and grooms should know. Don't ask for cash! And no wrapped gifts, please. Fools no one. Here's the proper way to talk on the sidewalk. Go with the flow. Keep to the right of the sidewalk. Keep moving. Don't stop to text or check email, especially at a building entrance. Number one rule about listening to music. Don't play music too loudly. If you use your iPod with cheap, leaky earbuds, those near you hear your playlist as if it's being played on the world's tiniest buzzsaw. This is sunglass etiquette many people miss. Remove your sunglasses and earbuds to speak to someone. Leaving them on is just plain rude. How to stand up during a flight. If you need to get up during a flight, don't yank the back of the seat in front of you as you do so. Share toys. Playground etiquette says that a toy that's been abandoned is up for grabs until its owner wants it back. Here's the potential part of being a good host. Don't let your guests drive drunk. How to handle guests at wedding. Read the wedding invitation. Don't ask to bring a wedding guest if your invitation doesn't indicate you may. Little wedding gift rule all brides and grooms should know. Don't ask for cash. And no wrapped gifts, please. Fools no one. Here's the proper way to talk on the sidewalk. Go with the flow. Number one rule about listening to music. Don't play music too loudly. If you use your iPod with cheap or leaky earbuds, those near you hear your playlist as if it's being played on the world's tiniest buzzsaw. Sunglass etiquette. Many people miss. Remove your sunglasses and earbuds to speak to someone. Leaving them on is just plain rude. Modern Wi-Fi etiquette. Don't hog the Wi-Fi. Try to follow the cell phone rule. Avoid public cell phone conversations. Don't talk on cell phones in a waiting room, checkout line, restaurant, train, or heaven forbid a bathroom stall. What do you tell people, and we've seen them, when they got their Bluetooth on, I've got no problem with a Bluetooth device, and they're talking on the phone, looking around, they're loud as could be. Rule one, no one wants to hear your phone conversation because two, no one cares. Three, by doing that, you're saying, look at me, I'm a narcissist. We just talked about that. Etiquette for digital RSVPs. Open your email, check your calendar, respond. Basic party etiquette, never show up empty-handed. Bring wine or flowers or dessert. Follow this instant messaging etiquette. Always ask if now is a good time to chat. Be respectful of other people's time. Basic dog walking etiquette is timeless. Curb and clean up after your dog, no matter where you are. I've seen more and more people get lazier. Look, I've got no problem with you walking your dog, but you got to realize he's going to go number two. You got to clean up after him. Don't leave it there for other people. All right, that's it for right now. I'm John Jeffers here on the Jeffers Brief. I want to say thanks for listening in. Tell me what you think. Email me at ContraRadio@live.com. ContraRadio@live.com. And I want to say thanks again for listening. For those of you, have a truly good and prosperous New Year coming up, because let's face it, we're all going to want it. We all want to need it. And thanks again for KYAH and KNAK for carrying my show, The Jeffers Brief. I do appreciate it. Until then, have a good one. I'm John Jeffers. Good day.